Bring the meeting to order. Representative Sanderson, you've had a chance to review the minutes of Tuesday, February 14th. Would you be willing to move approval?
I move approval.
All right. The motion's been made. Any discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. The minutes are adopted. Members, we're juggling schedules. The agency has to also appear in public safety. I think the members who have authorships on some of the agency's initiatives are here with us as well. It turns out that the bills are actually in the public safety committee, so life is complicated, but what the heck. We're flexible. So I think the way we're going to do it, and we can just affirm that I'm on the right track, is offer the opportunity for the authors to make brief statements, but the substance and then answering a lot of questions would be left to the agency presenters. Is that fair enough? Okay. Well, with that, Representative Broad, Soderstrom, Eastman, if you'd like to pick an order, and as you do it just for our tape, if you'd introduce yourselves, and please identify which House file you're speaking to, and then make your comments. Welcome, committee.
Thank you, Chairman Bradley and committee members. I'm speaking on House File 2973, which is the DHS bonding proposal to address some of the needs in our sex offender safety under sex offender safety. With the sex offender enhancements that we passed last year, there's a concern, I think, that we just upgrade the whole safety component of our sex offender treatment in the state. And so this is a proposal for $2.5 million, which is going to be focused primarily on enhancing the safety issues at St. Peter. The plan is to have another $2.5 million proposal that would be dealt with in the next bonding session that would complete the project of enhancing the safety of all our sex offender treatment facilities. And it's primarily going to be used for fencing and a number of other things, but I think we'll let the department comment on that.
Thank you. Ms. Soderstrom, welcome.
Okay. Mr. Chairman, members, I'm State Representative Judy Soderstrom, and I am representing HB. And I have House File 2981. And it's a bill to appropriate $47,780,000. This is part of the governor's proposal for the bonding bill for expansion of the sex offender treatment program at Moose Lake. And they're planning a large addition to that facility at Moose Lake. And then they would eventually be bringing all of the sex offenders who are now in St. Peter up to Moose Lake. And of course, this legislation is necessary because of the new sex offender legislation that we passed last year. And so I'm not going to say anything more. Mr. Wes Koistra, who's Assistant Commissioner for the Department of Human Services, is here, and he's going to be explaining and showing you exactly what their plans are and what they're planning to do at the Moose Lake facility. Thank you.
Thank you. That's the
thought. Thank you, Mr. Chair, and members of the committee. I have House File 2986, which is appropriating funds to the St. Peter Regional Treatment Facility for the purposes of building a treatment and programming space for the mentally ill and dangerous population at that facility. I, too, will allow Commissioner Koistra and Mr. Tessner to talk about the specifics of the bill, but I look forward to a favorable response and a recommendation to the Capital Investment Committee. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you. And I noticed Representative Hilke is here. What we've done is offered an opportunity for authors to make a brief comment before the departments. I think your bill is another one of those that is actually encompassed in the department or the agency proposals. So if you'd like to do as the other author done. Representative Sarsham, do you have a comment?
Mr. Chairman, members, I'm sorry. I didn't see Representative Hilke here when I first came down here. So, and Representative Hilke represents District 8A, and I represent District 8B.
Representative Hilke, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would just say, you're certainly aware, since we did the tour of Moose Lake together, that I think that this is a kind of a remarkable project in that it's very forward-looking and represents cooperation between state agencies that we'd like to see a lot more often. So with that, I will just allow the testimony to go forward. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. And just for clarity, am I then understanding that House File 2598 and House File 2981 are essentially the same funding as well?
That would be correct, Mr.
Okay.
Chair.
And you are right, Representative Hilty, and thank you for participating. A number of us did have the opportunity to tour the current Moose Lake facility and to see some of the ideas that will be presented this morning. Thank you for participating with us. And thank you, members. With that, Usher, I think we'd be first of all you, so welcome to the committee. And Mr. Chesney, good to see you again as well. Please proceed.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Wes Koyster from the Department of Human Services. With me is Mike Tesner, who is also from the Department of Human Services. We're going to quickly go through the list of bonding proposals that were just referenced by the representatives. And I will say from the onset that because we're shuffling, as the chair had mentioned, between two committees, and you have additional questions or issues you'd like to talk about to us, we would be very available to you at some other time. So I'm asking for some forgiveness in advance of going through a fairly significant proposal in a short period of time, but we're trying to make two committees. So with that, the department's proposal for bonding this year is about $65 million, a little more than that. Much of that proposal is for the sex offender treatment facility that will be built on the Moose Lake campus. The proposal also includes design money for a future facility. It also includes redevelopment and reuse money as we are moving off of campus and serving persons with mental illness in the community, and we're vacating certain campuses, so there's redesign and reuse money. We have an item for the construction of a new program building on the St. Peter campus. As mentioned, the campus security improvements. We have repair and betterment requests that we come forward with each bonding year, as well as asset preservation. I'm going to speak to the first two items, which are the Moose Lake expansion for the sex offender facility, as well as the design for the next one, and give you some context to that, because this represents a change from what you heard in 2005. In 2003, or prior to 2003, we were seeing a growth in the sex offender treatment program of about 15 to 18 individuals, patients a year. At the 2005 session, we talked about an estimated growth of about 25 to 36 patients per year. We said at that time that the growth was volatile because we were seeing extreme growth at that time due to changes in correction policy of referring all level 3 sex offenders to our program. We are a program that receives anybody who is committed to us, and those sex offenders are committed to us through referral by the corrections office to county attorneys, and the county attorneys go through a due process to determine commitments. So we don't have the number of individuals that are committed to us are really determined by that process. We were expecting to have extreme growth when the level 3 offenders were referred to us, and then we thought it would drop down to about 25 to 36 per year. Our approach to this would be to bond for the high figure and request operating funds for the lower figure. We did that because the numbers are so volatile. Well, after last session closed, we continued to see a great deal of growth, and in fact now our estimates of growth in the sex offender population have gone from 25 to 36 to somewhere between 60 and 80 per year, depending on the methodology we use for projecting. So the bonding proposal that we were left with after last session was to build a 150-bed facility on the St. Peter campus. That facility would not accommodate the kind of growth that we're looking at right now. In fact, the kind of growth we're looking at right now meant that the facility would not be built in time for the number of patients that we would be getting. And we're expecting now to be full in the St. Peter campus sometime in April. So to accommodate growth without having additional beds at St. Peter, we've worked with the Department of Corrections to use space that they had available on their Moose Lake Correction Site. And what we are doing in the Moose Lake Correction Site is segmenting a piece of that campus so that it's entirely separate from the other corrections use. And I know that members of this committee, has been mentioned, have gone up to Moose Lake and looked at our Moose Lake facilities there. So we're using the correction site to accommodate the interim growth, and then we are needing to build a facility that would to accommodate all the future growth. And now, instead of building that facility in St. Peter, we're proposing to build that facility at Moose Lake. The reason we've changed location is that we're going to be hiring 200 to 400 staff in the Moose Lake area for the temporary site. We have to provide permanent employment, and we can no longer, it would not be possible for us to move all those staff back down to St. Peter where the facility was originally sited. So our siting has changed to Moose Lake. There's other advantages to that. Because this population growth is so volatile, you're always wondering whether you're overbuilding, underbuilding, and so forth. We've had a number of conversations with corrections, and in this proposal, we are using a different building design. We are using a design that is the K structure that you may be familiar with, and some of you toured. And this is a building that is shaped like a K. I believe you have a picture of that in your documents.
It's the second to last page in your packet.
And this is the facility that Corrections is using as they're having to use a new construction. And so this is the facility that we will be using. It creates a number of advantages to us. One is that it's cheaper to operate. If you can imagine, when we were building 25-bed units, the expense of security and oversight in that compared to 100-bed units that the K siting represents. So this will provide us more beds with the same money as what we were anticipating at St. Peter, about twice as many beds, a little more than, and cheaper operating costs in the long run. So that's where we're at today, Mr. Chair.
Commissioner Kleister, just one question. Is there anything, because of the change in the plans, that would be canceled from the previous bonding approvals?
Mr. Chair, the bonding that was dedicated towards St. Peter was $3.25 million for design, and that money is no longer needed. And part of our request here includes design money, because the previous bonding approval was site specific, and we couldn't use it for this project.
So
$3.2 million.
So that in your the details of your proposal then is sort of what you need to take care of in order to be able to be authorized to use that in a different way.
Actually, they requested the design money again in this proposal, and then they would have to cancel that bonding is the way they decided to do it.
Thank you.
Mr. Dean. Thank you, Mr. Chair. In going to the facility on the tour, one of the important concepts that I think that was brought forward was that these facilities are very, very expensive to bring online in terms of capital outlay, and very expensive to construct, and obviously we need them, we need to get these beds. But that's built to handle an emerging bubble that's within the system now when these folks need to be taken care of, that this bubble, we're hoping, will someday be erased, and that we'll have an oversupply of beds. And that one of the concepts that I thought that was intriguing about this is that this could go from DHS back to corrections in facility in total or part. Could you talk a little bit about that and just provide some comfort that these facilities could indeed be used by DOC down the road? And we all hope and pray that we will be able to do that.
Mr. Chair, Representative Dean, thank you for bringing that up. The advantage of using this building design is that it will be similar to what Corrections is using, and we've talked about wanting to build space that they can use. So I believe members here visited their K design at Lionel Lakes, and what we're going to be building will be very, very similar to that, modified slightly because of square footage requirements that we have as a hospital treatment facility versus what Corrections has. But that's part of what the discussion with corrections about. If we don't need this space, you can use this space. If someday we don't need this space, it's available to you. Having it at Moose Lake makes it even more advantageous because, as you know, our campus is almost adjacent to one another. So there's that juxtaposition advantage as well. There are also other advantages in the meantime, and that is that corrections is good at security. We provide treatment. We're already providing treatment in the corrections programs, and this is an opportunity for us to talk about ways that, perhaps they can provide some of the security services that we need in our program. So it really is an approach that, builds on the relationship between the two agencies, and I would agree when someone says they don't see that very often. We, both corrections and DHS is really excited about having this way of working together. I want to note that there was changes to the sentencing guidelines for sex offenders, I believe last year, or maybe it was the previous year. But, and so folks have been asking us, well, aren't you expecting the, a drop in the growth due to those sentencing guidelines? Well, because the individuals we're receiving through referrals from corrections are currently in prison, and those guidelines do not apply to those individuals, we're not going to see the effects of those changes in sentencing guidelines probably for 8 years. So we have an 8-year window of growth that we have to accommodate, and now we are building a building that both agencies can use, is flexible, and we really think it's a good government project.
Thank you. And just a commentary on my own as well, members, I think we had a chance also to visit the Lionel Lakes correctional facilities to see in practice some of these configurations, because these configurations are line of sight kind of configurations, and that's where some of this operational efficiency comes from, because as you can imagine, looking at this K and then kind of the modified K, that means that you can have a centralized desk there that has line of sight visibility across the entire, and I think in that case it was like 400 or something like that, that they had line of sight from a single desk, as opposed to if you've been in some other older facilities, you get staff heavy because you need to have line of sight, but you don't have, it just takes a lot more people to do it. There is sort of one question in it. You know, I think in one sense the public can feel comforted by the fact that the state of Minnesota in one way or another is protecting them from predators. And that's part of what this is about, unfortunately, and it's unfortunate we have to do that, but this is a reality in our society, and I don't think any of us want to put really, truly dangerous people on the street. And so we have this notion of civil commitment once they've served their sentences. The question that's sort of asked, and it's a tough one, but at least give me kind of a feel. When you look at these facilities and you look at the remarkable costs there are, when you and maybe you can even tell the committee kind of what the average cost per bed or so forth is, but they're big numbers. They're really big numbers. How do we settle in on the right amenities, the right designs, the right longevity of facilities and so forth to be sure that for the taxpayers who are going to ask us, you know how it is, and they'll say, why are we having all these benefits for people who really, in many cases, have done some pretty horrible things? So I'm curious, one, if you could share with the committee what the average cost per bed, even these configurations, and then two, what have you done to sort of say that we've got a design that is a cost-effective design? I'm talking about now in terms of the facility.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, the per diem, I'm not sure if this is the question you're asking or whether you're asking the capital cost.
It's building cost I'm talking about. How much is per bed does it cost? Well, I mean, I guess we could almost do the math, million, right?
I'd have to do it in my head, and I'm probably, so it's just the $40 million divided by the 400 that we
would expect. Yeah, so we're $100,000 perhaps plus range anyway. That's probably good enough for a discussion. Now, how about the other question?
I think that's a really hard question, first of all, Mr. Chairman. That's kind of that's what we're struggling with, and we're struggling with that not only on the facility design, but we're struggling with that on the operations of the program, because when they come to our program, they are required, we are required, and should be required to provide treatment services. So we start there. We need to provide treatment for these individuals. Then we go to how can we make that treatment, how can we honor that obligation and be as efficient as possible. One thing that this ruling design represents is that a great deal of our cost is about security. We're going to be reducing security significantly here with this building design. In fact, I think that the building design will save our operations costs of about, when it's full, about $80 a day. And so, you know, we have a growing per diem, but once this building is full, we're projecting to be around $80 a day less than what would it otherwise be under old design. So that's one way we're doing it. Another way we're trying to be efficient here is when people refuse treatment, that we don't provide treatment. We provide the minimum amount of treatment, because it does us no good to provide treatment to individuals who are refusing it. And so we have tried to create a treatment level that is based upon where people are at in their treatment process. Are they cooperating? Are they not cooperating? Do they exhibit dangerous behaviors that we need to watch? There are some people who refuse treatment but are also very dangerous, so we need to provide more security for those individuals, even if we provide less treatment. So we're working with levels of care to provide the best treatment we can to individuals who are committed and involved to that process, and to pare down treatment for individuals who are not cooperating. So those are a couple things we're looking at. But we're continuing to analyze it. We're looking at how much are our treatment costs, how much are our security costs, what are the components of those costs, and trying to figure out the best way to approach this. But the bottom line is we need to and are meeting our constitutional obligation to provide treatment for the individuals.
Thank you. You know, there are things in this that you wish you didn't have to do, but as I think I had a brief discussion with Representative Hilty, the one silver lining is that he's got in his pocket probably four higher notes, because you're going to be, I think this is from the employment in the area and the opportunities in the area, this is a positive influence. I wish it were much more constructive kinds of thing, but it is certainly an opportunity for people in that area for employment as well. Well, thank you for your testimony. What do we do next? Chesner?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I would like to talk a little bit about the campus redevelopment and reuse. That's $7 million. This was before this committee last year. The mental health redesign, and that's developing a broader array of community mental health services, is displacing the need for regional treatment centers. These dollars are dedicated to the reuse of those campuses. This past January, February, the Wilmer campus was redesigned and sold to the county and then subsequently to a private developer. We're anticipating the same type of activity around the Fergus Falls campus, the Agua Chin campus, and the Brainerd campus. So the $7 million is dedicated to in support of the reuse of those campuses. And let me remind you that these campuses are have many large old buildings that need to be either, if we're going to maintain them, kept up, and both from the physical plant standpoint, and heated and lighted and monitored for security, even if we're not in them. The average cost of that is about $1 million per year per campus. So this is a constructive way to dispose of those campuses, working with the local communities in the best way to use those campuses.
Mr. Chesney, I might remind members, for those who are trying to follow in the books, and maybe we ought to do this along the way, if you can, I don't know if you have the book, but this is starting on page 19, really, in your sections, if you wanted to follow the section that Mr. Chesney was referring to. Sorry for the interruption. Please continue.
Mr. Chair, member of the committee, any questions on the mental health redesign, campus reuse? Then Representative Broad spoke to the St. Peter new campus, or new program building. One of the graphs in your chart is showing the growth of the MIND, the mentally ill and dangerous population. It's the second graph, red line. We used to grow in that program about 5 patients per year, which would fill up a 25-bedding unit every 5 years. We're now growing at a rate of somewhere between 20 to 25 patients a year, which means we have to add a new unit per year. The good news is that as the Minnesota Sex Offender Program
buildings go on, we'll be displacing the MSOP population from St. Peter and then using that space for security hospitals, so there's no bonding for new security hospital space. However, we do need additional multi-purpose space, and this $2.5 million is addressing that need. It will be used for treatment, for recreation, vocational, and educational activities on the St. Peter campus. The next project is the security and safety improvements. Representative Eastland spoke to this. We have, over the course of the last couple of years, come to recognize the clear, distinct differences between the mentally ill and dangerous population and sex offenders. The sex offender population has long criminal histories. These are folks that are motivated to oftentimes not participate in treatment and engage in criminal activities, as well as consider the option of escape. Completely different from the MIND population, who carry a major mental illness, and as long as the mental illness is treated, it moderates the behavior and the risk. And these are not folks on the MIND side that are motivated to engage in criminal behavior or try to escape. Based upon that realization, we had an escape attempt last spring. Following that, we did apprehend, both individuals were apprehended by law enforcement and prosecuted for those escapes. However, we called in the Minnesota Department of Corrections, as Assistant Commissioner Koister pointed out. We're working very closely with the Department of Corrections. We asked their security audit team to come in, which they did in May of last summer. Based upon that audit, they came up with a series of recommendations. This $2.5 million is in response to that audit. And as Representative Eastland pointed out, the majority of that is modifying the fencing down on the St. Peter campus. Fencing, motion detectors, cameras, lighting. We're essentially raising the sex offender security perimeter to the DOC level to ensure that we don't have a repeat of last spring. The roof repair and replacement are pretty straightforward. Those are in every year. Actually, both of them are going down with the disposal of the older campuses, with the buildings, some of which were built over 120 years ago. We no longer repairing those roofs. They're either being demolished or turned into something else under someone else's control, which has allowed us to reduce those costs. So there's a $1.5 million request for roof repair and replacement, and asset preservation is $4 million. And I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Just if I go back, on the system-wide campus redevelopment, which has been sort of a multi-year, multi-dimensional, complicated, et cetera, kind of thing, is this, in your opinion, the last installment? I mean, does this bring to conclusion the years of work in trying to redo our regional treatment center program, the building situations?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, the $7 million really is targeted at the Fergus Falls campus, and we're expecting the Brainerd redesign to be complete by November of this year, so we would anticipate the dollars for Brainerd would be in the next bonding cycle.
Okay, and Mr. Chesner, is Brainerd been the last one of these?
And Brainerd, Mr. Chair, Brainerd would be the last facility.
Okay, thank you. Well, for those who have been around for a while, we've been marching through these for a long time. You were a lot different when you started on this, I bet.
I was a lot taller, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Powell.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. On the system-wide campus security and safety improvements, does this request fulfill all the recommendations that were brought forth by the DOC audit?
Mr. Chair, Representative, it fulfills the ones for the St. Peter campus. The audit was also done up at the Moose Lake campus, and we staged it so that we can take care of the most immediate needs first. However, of course, after the escape attempt, we did some dramatic modifications of the way that we're operating, both in terms of our staffing security. For example, we have a security team that is constantly circling the perimeter at this point, which we did not have before. We also have modified temporarily the existing fencing, so we're confident that we can get to the new fencing from here to there. But in answer, direct answer to your question, it should take care of the St. Peter campus, and then the other dollars would, in 08, would be dedicated to some modifications at the Moose Lake campus.
Okay, thank you.
Mr. Chair.
Commissioner Koister.
I wanted to mention related to security and also related to the question about how we address the cost of treatment and the cost of program. Another activity we have going on is to aggressively investigate any criminal activity in our program. And in doing so, once if we find something, we also encourage aggressive prosecution of that, because if we are a treatment program, we want people to be there for treatment. And so we have a number of active investigations going on at any time. We put in some certain security. That is also adds to security, because when you have one individual involved in those kinds of behaviors, it brings other people involved in those kinds of behaviors. So I wanted to mention that to this committee as well, that we have two investigators on staff right now, and they are very busy with that, because this is a group of individuals that have historically been involved in those kinds of activities. We have an ability to monitor phone calls, we do that, and we are being very, very aggressive with that. And if they're prosecuted, then they go back to the criminal justice system, because we want people in our program that are there for treatment.
So, no further questions. Thank you. And maybe just to the members, we've gone through some fairly sizable investments and some fairly complex proposals really fairly quickly. You'll have the books. Help you review it, and then I'll also remind the committee that the obligation of this committee is to provide our recommendations to the full bonding committee. And I will certainly be looking to committee members for any advice that you may have in these and then any other proposals that are before this committee. So please, I hope we all sort of do our homework on it, because there's a lot of money involved here, very important work that's going on, and I take our responsibility to give our recommendations to the bonding committee very well. We don't have any motions, but just sort of for the record, what will happen at this point is that we will hold over for consideration in our prioritization these recommendations. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
I think we're prepared now to move on to Representative Gazalka and others for Brainerd Training Treatment Center for methamphetamine treatment. Welcome to the committee, and as you testify, if you please identify yourselves for the record.
Thank you. Good morning, Mr. Chair and members. Representative Paul Gazalka. I don't think that I've been before your committee before, so...
Oh, you'll love it.
I consider it an honor. I'm hoping that you'll consider House File 2920 in your bonding considerations. This is an appropriation for a methamphetamine treatment center, and let me say that we are open to more than just methamphetamine chemical dependency, but it appropriates $5.6 million to establish a regional methamphetamine treatment program for pregnant women and women with young children at the Brainerd Regional Treatment Center. I think you just heard that Brainerd was fourth on the list as far as where they were going, and we're patient, but we also want to make sure that we are taking advantage of the facility we have out there. I'll tell you that I did an informal survey of people in my community, and about 70% hope that we can still use this facility in some way medically. So even if it's turned over to the county, we're hoping that we have a way to use that. Right now, we still will keep a chemical dependency program, traumatic brain injury, and adolescent mental health. So that's kind of where we're at on this issue. And let me just say one more thing. I talked to Mike Tesner and other DHS people about whether this would fit with where we're going as a state in regards to health care, and it was my assumption that it would fit, and you can ask them about that. And finally, one of the things they told me was that we really have a need to help women that are chemically dependent, and there's a real benefit to have their children nearby, and those are situations that we really aren't doing well in the state, and this is an opportunity to do that. With that, I'm going to turn this over to Commissioner Terry Sluice. He's been looking at this issue for a lot longer than I have, and he'll probably be able to answer most of your questions.
Commissioner, welcome to the committee.
Thank you. Thank you, Representative Gazalka. Mr. Chair and members, I just would like to give you a little background. My name is Terry Sluice. I'm Coal Range County Commissioner. Today I'm testifying on behalf of resolutions that were passed unanimously by the counties of Cass County, Coal Range County, and Aiken County in support of this bill. As you probably already know, rural Minnesota has been inundated with methamphetamines for some years now, and we have been in support of previous bills passed by these committees and the legislature, and now want to start turning toward treatment, which is an extremely important part of the operation. As a little bit of background, just letting you know that this is part of the ongoing master plan process of Brainerd, which was started in November. We are in the active phase of taking a look at reuse of the campus at this time. We intend to have that process completed by November of this year. I did prepare a little bit of background for you on research so that you can kind of see where we're coming from in terms of supporting this bill. There's a lot of research recently completed by both national organizations and federal. Research that was recently completed by the University of Maryland found that was on February 20th of 2006, found that 5% of pregnant women are using methamphetamine in areas that are methamphetamine prevalent states, which does include Minnesota. That's 5 out of 100 pregnancies where the woman is using methamphetamine. In Crow Wing County, we did 4 point-in-time studies, taking a look at data that was available to us. Specifically, it was easy to track those children under the age of 8 through the system that's provided to us by the Department of Human Services. Those 4 studies, in April of 2004, we had 37 children under the age of 8 that were in out-of-home placements. 33, or 66%, of those children were in out-of-home placement due to methamphetamine. In October of 2004, there were 45 children. Of that, 25 or 55% were in out-of-home placement due to meth. In May of 2005, there were 50 children in out-of-home placements, 66% related to meth, and we thought it would go down, but in October, we had 50 children in out-of-home placement, 76% related to methamphetamines. In some cases, women who continued to test positive for meth use during their pregnancy, it became necessary as a child protection and a probation violation situation to jail the mother during the pregnancy to protect the fetus. According to the legislative auditor, their report in February of 2006, treatment availability around the state of Minnesota is uneven. It found also that treatment for methamphetamine use is less available than other treatment programs. And in a recent article written by Dakota County Attorney Jim Baxter, he states, "I've heard it said that we will never be able to arrest our way out of the illegal drug problem in America. I believe it is more accurate to say that we will never incarcerate our way out of this pervasive problem that has long plagued our nation's urban cities and, with rapidly growing spread of methamphetamines, now threatens rural and suburban communities as well." And I'll focus a little bit on a study that was done by the National Association of Counties in January of 2006. It found that of 200 respondents from hospital emergency rooms in 39 states, 73% of the hospital officials reported that emergency room presentations involving meth have increased over the last 5 years. And 68% report continuing increases. The Brainerd Hospital has indicated to me that their feeling is that approximately 40% of emergency room responses are due to methamphetamines at this time. Meth users seeking treatment require special protocols and longer treatment periods than users of other drugs. This was part of the survey. And I also serve on the Minnesota Supreme Court Chemical Dependency Task Force. They recently, as part of our charge from former Chief Justice Kathleen Blatz, was to submit a report to the Supreme Court, which we did on February 3rd of 2006. The first major principle of our findings in the report was, quote, AOD, which is alcohol and other drugs, AOD addiction
is a treatable chronic disease. People who suffer from AOD addiction can and do recover, and at the same rates or similar rates for other chronic illnesses, examples, asthma, diabetes, and hypertension. And the process of recovery from addiction often involves relapse. The task force specifically received expert testimony regarding methamphetamine use and addiction. The report indicates that the estimated annual public cost to Minnesota for methamphetamines was $140 million in 2004. The report also indicates female methamphetamine use demands special attention. The report found that criminal findings against women for methamphetamine in every category have at least doubled and often nearly tripled since the year 2000. So the task force recommended the eligibility criteria for public treatment should be expanded. Access to treatment is critical, particularly for addiction to methamphetamine. And in line D of their findings, interventions for people with AOD problems, including methamphetamine, should begin while the person is in jail or prison and continue through transition back to the community. So our proposal in House File 2920 supports a regional pilot approach to treatment, which includes intensive acute treatment for pregnant women and women with young children, detoxification, health education, cognitive training, vocational assistance, and transition back to their communities for continued care and follow-up. It would be consistent with the actions of the 2005 legislature, which allocated $5.5 million for a methamphetamine treatment program at Wilmer. And the Brainerd Project would assist with the Ninth Judicial's court program, where there is a significant number of existing or new drug courts and other problem-solving courts, by providing acute and extended treatment services prior to follow-up and return to the communities, hopefully to drug or problem-solving courts. The Brainerd Project, although specific to a targeted need, would expand access and availability to treatment, which follows best practices. Therefore, we would support a chemical dependency program with an emphasis on methamphetamines, but would also accept other uses. Bottom line, as I'm running out of time here, this is that according to the legislative auditor, state policy for community-based treatment states, the interests of society are best served by treating chemically dependent persons. We're prepared to move forward with that project in the Brainerd system as a regional project and would ask for your support. Thank you.
Commissioner, I don't want to go too deep into it, but I'm wondering, having been familiar myself with different treatment models and some of the difficulties of treatment for methamphetamine addiction, is there really an established treatment model that's planned? Is there kind of an owner? I mean, who's the provider that will actually be executing the treatment plan?
There are a number of treatment plans. In fact, treatment for methamphetamine specifically is very similar to other treatments. The protocols and the length of time and the detoxification are a little bit different. Since methamphetamine impacts predominantly the limbic and prefrontal cortex of the brain, there is a destruction of dopamine, which is the chemical that allows us to basically feel good. And that research shows from the University of Los Angeles campus that that dopamine reproduction does not continue or come back to anywhere near normal levels for approximately a year. So in dealing with methamphetamine, we are using traditional models of treatment. However, the time is extended. There are certain health care issues up front that need to be addressed. Detoxification is a little bit different because of the type of chemicals that are put into the body. And there is a problem with motivation. Some of the chemicals that are destroyed in the brain in the early times of treatment indicate that the patients in many cases are not very motivated to move forward to treatment. So I hope that answers your question.
Yeah, in part, except the other part of it was sort of who owns the facility, who actually owns. Is this a Department of Human Services
regional center that would be DHS staffed, DHS of State of Minnesota people, or is it something different than that?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yeah, we are currently in the process of master planning. The Colon County Board is the local government entity that is doing the master planning. We have contracted with a specialist organization, so the community will have full feedback as to whether or not this would be a county-run function, a private entity function, or a 501c3 as part of the master planning process.
The only thing I would suggest that, you know, you use the term about private run, I mean, bonding money is by statute limited in terms of being able to be to public facility. You probably are well aware of that, so we have to be careful about that aspect of it. And then from the operational, and I mean, everything you said about the need, I think anybody who's been involved in this realizes that. But what about the ongoing operational funds? I think your last paragraph speaks to kind of some potential multiple sources. Has that been worked out yet?
No, sir. At this point, it has not. There is some changes going on, as you're well aware of, in legislatures for Rule 25's being updated. Rule 31 was updated last year, as I recall. And then there are some chemical treatment dollars which are flow through counties at this time, but the legislative process is continuing to evaluate those. There are some aspects that would be medically refundable from state and federal programs. There are some programs that actually operate as nonprofit organizations. For example, one of those would be Hazelden and others in the state that specifically deal with chemical treatment programs. All of those would be asked to apply for requests for proposals.
Thank you. Commissioner Goodwin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I really do like this plan. It sounds like something we really need. I'm wondering why it's limited to a couple things. One, why it's limited to pregnant women and women with young children, which is a very important group. I totally agree with that. But we still have the issue with males, too, and the need for long-term treatment. And the one thing I want to say is that I've had an opportunity to try to help constituents who wanted chemical dependency treatment for alcohol try to find a facility that would take them. And because of the meth, population out there, it's very difficult right now for people that are trying to get chemical dependency treatment for alcohol or marijuana or other substances, heroin, so forth, to try to get treatment, because the meth, the people that are on meth are taking all those spots. And the other thing, when I was dealing with these constituents last summer, one of them I did get a spot for out in Representative Vandeveer's district, and it was a very good treatment facility, but it was a 30-day program. And most of the people that were at that facility, when I had a chance to visit the facility, were meth users. In the follow-up conversations, I found out that every single one of the meth users that had been in what I considered to look like at least a wonderful treatment program had failed, had relapsed, because it was a 30-day program, and that's not enough for meth users, as you said. So I do know that we need either a state-run or a county-run facility. That would be my preference, to have it that way to deal with these meth users. But what about the male population? What's going to happen with them? And the older female population. There were a number of people in this facility that I visited that were women in their 40s and 50s, and their children maybe were raised, but they were still had this very serious meth problem.
Commissioner?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would also let you know that this is part of a broader program that is being discussed in policy levels at the Association of Minnesota Counties. We are looking at, in fact, one of the recommendations that came out of the AMC's Health and Human Services Policy Committee, on which I served this last session, was that we look at a regional approach statewide.
With one of the facilities in Wilmer approved last year, which was a general methamphetamine program, the impetus behind grant facilities starting out at least with a female population was needs driven. As we are now seeing a huge number of pregnant women and women with children who are in need of treatment, in longer term treatment than just the 30-day programs to which you refer. The concept is that we would start out as in best practices with any addiction, but would see our primary use in the region of greater Minnesota right now tends to be methamphetamines, but we would certainly not rule out any other drug usage. And the other part of the concept really is that there's going to be consideration based on recommendations of the Supreme Court Task Force that drug courts and problem-solving courts of all varieties be expanded statewide. The Ninth Judicial, in which the counties that I represent today are focusing on the fact that they all are starting new drug court programs. So we see this treatment program being longer term than the standard 30-day, but also transitioning with aftercare back into drug courts within the communities that we currently are signed on to this program. So it would be a part of a larger regional concept in dealing with those addictions.
Thank you.
Thank you. Commissioner and members, we have three more groups to present, and I'm sorry I kind of let this go on a little extra time, but we do have a couple of members. I just asked to make our questions and answers brief so we give respect to the other members and teams that are here to testify today for their bills. Representative Powell.
I have several questions, but I will limit myself to one and follow up. How many beds are we talking about? I didn't see that in any of the...
I don't have a number of that yet. It looks to me like we currently are looking at 60,000 square feet. Under the current model that we have, that would be approximately 150 beds. However, the beds in the existing facilities are double beds. There's two to a room. My guess is that if you're going to have a family situation or a mother-child, you would cut that in half. There would also, however, be proposed housing for those that are more advanced in the process to live off of the campus as part of the bonding project.
Thank you. Representative Walker, last question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll be brief. A couple of things. I'm intrigued by the project. I, too, as someone that has spent my entire life really working on out-of-home placement and understanding the devastation that that has on a family and the community, I, too, share some of the same concerns as Representative Goodwin and the limitations of it. I'd be remiss if I didn't say for the record it has nothing to do with you. While I do believe that we need to be aggressive in handling the meth epidemic that is across our state, I would be just remiss if I did not mention that the current funding limitations for treatment programs, and it is not a unique situation that 21 days or 30 days does not fix meth. It does not fix crack. It does not fix alcohol. And the individuals that are struggling in my community trying to stay sober and do the right thing also.
Absolutely correct. All of the data indicates that the number one drug of problems is alcohol at this point. In the metro, it tends to be more cocaine and crack. In the greater Minnesota areas, methamphetamine is huge.
Thank you. And I think there are follow-up questions, perhaps you, Representative Gazalka, members can speak to him. I know because this is a very important and sometimes complex issue. Thank you very much,
Mr. Chair. Close by simply saying one of the things that I required of Commissioner Slewis, because he's passionate about this issue, is that we had consensus from our local government, and we had, like you said, 100% of all the commissioners of the three counties want to go this direction. Thank you for taking
the
time to hear us.
We'll hold over House File 2920 for consideration in our committee prioritization. Representative House. House, welcome to Finney. You have House File 2756, right?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. We're back with Agua Ching again, and hopefully we can, by the end of this session, have everything all figured out and know exactly where we're going. We have a great opportunity. The Benedictine is extremely interested in, the short version, they're interested in building a long-term care facility at the site, a brand new one, bringing in two clinics to the facility, and building a hospital, all within a period of time. But the first problem, obviously, we have is with when the state abandons Agua Ching and we're left with the buildings, something needs to be done with them. Now, last year, we did pass a bonding bill that has money in there for demolition and stuff like that. But we don't believe that there's enough money there to do the demolition. Either does DHS. So what this bill does is requesting $1.5 million for the city of Walker to connect the water to the water tower at the Agua Ching site. 2 or 3 years ago, I passed a bill that transferred that water tower and some of that infrastructure to the city of Walker, or could be transferred. That has not taken place yet. It may not. That's a cost that the city of Walker feels whoever takes over this site, whether it's another government entity, private entity, they're going to need water. So that's part of that request. The balance of the money, $1.6 million, $35,000 is for a survey that DHS is totally in support of. $150,000 is to relocate a high-tension wire. $500,000 is for healthcare campus technical assistance. That at this time we're not 100% sure it's bondable, but we want to bring it through the process until Department of Finance says no, it's not bondable. There is an additional $250,000 and $650,000 that deals with the demolition. That's what the state plan a year ago said we needed to do the demo. It's possible between now and the next 6 weeks that a large portion of that DHS might be able to fund without bonding. They may be able to go internally to do that. We don't know that yet. I've been in touch with Commissioner Goodnow and Mike Tesner and many others. They're aware of where we're going and how the numbers are moving a little bit. And I believe, Mr. Chairman, you're on capital investment. Oh, you're not. Okay. I am. We're still shaping this. It's not going to be more than this. It'll probably be less money by the time we get further into the process. I'm certainly welcome to answer any questions.
You could provide the committee, you were going through some breakdown numbers that I don't think the committee has the benefit of.
Sure, I can.
We just basically have the bill, so if you could provide the committee with those, I'd appreciate it.
I'll get that to you, Mr. Chairman.
And then I think also as some of those negotiations proceed, because as you know the process pretty well,
yes.
We have to do the prioritization, but we better do it on what the real conclusion is and not just what this thing is then.
True. I will give you the breakdown numbers and hope the committee will realize that some of those numbers may go away. It may be less. We just don't know that yet for sure.
One question that might be helpful to the committee, because this has also had a long history, and I've had the pleasure of touring the place, and at one point in time I was carrying from office to office a red piece of tile from the old roof.
Yes.
I finally got rid of it. It's hard for me to throw anything away, but I have had a chance to see it, so this has also had a long history. What is essentially the site utilization plan for this? You talk about preparing it, but what is the plan for the site itself?
In the future? Well, you know, we've gone through the reuse plan that, Representative Junkie and Nornis have all gone through this and spent a lot of state dollars. And the answer, every time they decided A, B, and C, the answer was some kind of health care campus, be it public, private. That was the conclusion. And fortunately, within about a year ago, the Benedictine was very interested. My county put out an RFP for a hospital. Five responded. Four said, well, how much money do you have? We'd love to help you. Just how much money do you have and we'll build a hospital? Well, the Benedictine said, we have the money. We'll build the hospital. We just need your permission. So obviously they chose the Benedictine. And the negotiations are hot and heavy with the Benedictine. The state and the county have agreed that by August 15th of this year, if they don't sign a contract and a property purchase agreement, and it's probably all going to fall apart, and the state will be stuck with it, and they'll probably have to tear it down. And sell it to Disney World, maybe, I don't know. But a very great deal of promising things there. I've already talked to the Commissioner of Health. She's very interested, and we're very close with Commissioner Goodenough also in having a great handshake across the divide and agreeing that this is the best way to go.
Well, one of the things about, if I understand, Representative House, and I'm anxious to help you and help us conclude this, if it's a hospital, do we have to go through a hospital moratorium process?
Correct, Mr. Chairman. There are a couple of issues. The hospital moratorium exception is one of those, and we are also going through the Commissioner of Health with the public review. I have gotten word through Deputy Commissioner Boudreau that the reuse plan would also be part of that public policy review of a necessity for a hospital. I don't know if DHS has the application in their hands today. If not, they'll probably have it tomorrow or the next day. With a payment of $10,000, and they are going to put it accelerate their process and review it. They already have most of the information they need. I can't come out and say they will support it. They did say that if I were to move it through the process without their support, that they would simply be neutral, but I don't want to do that. I'd rather they be sitting here with me saying, yeah, it's okay. Commissioner Goodenough also, if that were to happen, he's looking internally at reimbursement rates for long-term care facilities. There are some things that I think can be done. He believes, and the Benedictine believe, that can be done internally with new structures. If not, I also have a bill drafted that makes a few technical adjustments in new property for nursing homes. Way over my head, I'm sure you know what I'm talking about. We are so close to having everything put together, but yet, as they say, so far in the process, you know.
Yeah. Well, anything that I can do up from House to help as well. I believe it's probably the Department of Health is where the analysis, the statutes require the Department of Health to do an analysis for us in terms of area needs and hospital beds. So that's the process that would come to this committee then.
Yeah, everybody's pretty aware of where we're at, and everybody's kind of on board, but not yet capable of saying, we love it, Larry, and let's go.
I don't see any questions. Representative House, thank you. We will hold over House File 2756 for consideration at our committee priorities. Thank you. Representative Dunkey. Representative Dunkey, welcome.
Hey, Mr. Chair. If you want to move my bill for future consideration or someone else, I'd appreciate it.
Yeah, we'll at the end of it make the appropriate statement. Cause it's,
I know you know how to do whatever is appropriate.
We'll mumble over the statement every time. But.
All right. Well, Mr. Chair, as usual, it's an honor to be here, and I'm here for something besides regional treatment centers today. So I hope you're all ready to pay attention to what I think is an exceptional project. Every one of you, I think, are familiar, and particularly in rural Minnesota, but across the state, we've got a couple of real problems to address in dentistry. Number one, in rural Minnesota, while we have a fair amount of dental practices in place now, all our dentists are aging, and we're not sure who's going to take over those practices in the very near future. So we've got a big problem looming just a few years down the road. And number two, I suspect every one of you has gotten a phone call from a low-income or MA or government program patient looking for a dentist to treat them. And right now from Wilmer, I believe the closest spot is Big Lake, where they can find treatment, and or into the Twin Cities, and transportation, other things generally mean that they don't get the treatment. So what we have is something very unique, members, and I think it's going to work for a very meager investment from the state. We're actually proposing to set up a partnership with the state, the University of Minnesota, and Minnesota Dentists, to provide training and facilities out at Rice Memorial Hospital in Wilmer, and it will become a spot not only for training these dentists, hopefully for rural practices in the future, but also a spot where all of our low-income folks can get their treatment out in our part of the state. So beyond that, Mr. Chair, as usual,
As I sit in committees, one of the things that always amazes me is we always get to see the best and the brightest come before us, and it's no exception today, Mr. Chair. And I'd like to turn it over to two of those folks who are sitting here, and a third in the audience, if we need be. I have Patrick Lloyd, who's the dean of the University of Minnesota Dental School, and I also have Lori Monser to my right, the CEO of Rice Memorial Hospital, and he also just stepped down in December as the chair of the Minnesota Hospitals Association. So, Mr. Chair, if you'd allow them to explain the project here in a couple minutes each, and hopefully move forward.
Duncan, if you don't mind, just before we do, because you're very familiar with this, I was trying to read through here.
Yep.
You know, sort of who owns the property, because it's on the property, apparently, of the Rice Memorial. I don't know if that's a private or if that's a county
Rice
facility.
Memorial Hospital, I believe, is the biggest municipal hospital, municipally owned hospital in the state of Minnesota. City of Wilmer owns it, and we've just finished a $55 million expansion of that facility. It's incredible, and I hope everyone who's out there on this committee, or if you're ever traveling, please come by. Mr. Moss and myself would love to host you and show you one of the newest facilities in the state.
Neil along with
that
or something?
It would be. We'd make sure you got taken care of, Mr. Chair.
If you understand, I'm asking. I just wanted to be
It needs to be public dollars and facilities. Right. We understand. Dick Dirks is also here in the audience, the director of MDA, to lend his support if you desire to.
Thank you. Welcome to the committee. If you'd introduce yourselves as we begin.
Thank you. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Lawrence Massa, or Lori Massa. I'm the CEO at Rice Memorial Hospital in Wilmer. We're the largest municipal hospital in the state of Minnesota. We're licensed for 136 acute hospital beds, 78 skilled nursing facility beds. We operate a variety of services with the mission of restoring and promoting the health and well-being of the residents of West Central Minnesota, and that's why we're here today. We have a strong history of partnering with the University of Minnesota's Academic Health Center and other MinSCU organizations for the training of healthcare professionals in Wilmer. We've been doing this for many years with great success. We have on our medical staff of over 100 physicians in Wilmer, 37 of them are RPAP, former RPAP students who trained in rural areas. And that's why we're excited about this dental training clinic in Wilmer. As Representative Junkie indicated, there is a huge problem in Minnesota, particularly in rural Minnesota. In 2003, Minnesota was identified as the number one state experiencing a negative percentage change in dentists to the population ratio. The lack of access to dental care, especially for patients on public assistance and low-income patients with no insurance, is magnified significantly in rural areas. In greater Minnesota, we're seeing an increasing number of people with dental emergencies using the hospital's emergency room for pain control as they wait to try to get in to see a dentist for the ultimate treatment for their needs. Our project would develop a 10-chair rural training clinic in the hospital at Rice Memorial. We've identified 4,800 square feet of space within our walls to work with the University of Minnesota to develop a state-of-the-art clinic that would train at any given time 4 to 6 dental students from the university. And Dean Lloyd will talk more about the benefit of this to the university itself. We think that this will certainly open up access to the 12-county area that we've proposed as our service area, which is very similar to that of the hospital. We think we will be drawing patients who need these types of services from outside of that 12-county area as well. The benefit on the training side of things is we think that based on our historical experience, the likelihood of some of these dentists who are exposed to rural communities relocating to greater Minnesota is much higher if they've had a chance to work and train in a rural area. So that's the substance of what we're trying to do. To give you an idea of what the situation is in the 12-county area, the area has a higher or it has fewer dentists to the population ratio than the state. In some cases, more than double the population ratio. In Big Stone County, for example, my data shows there was one dentist for 5,300 people in the county. Swift County, which is just to the west of us, the ratio is one dentist to 3,385 population, and in the statewide average is 1 to 1,637. So eight of the 12 counties are designated as federal dental health shortage areas in the proposed service area. So we think this project has significant need. The build out is estimated to cost about $1.2 million. We're seeking $500,000 through the bonding proposal. Rice Health Foundation, the foundation associated with the hospital, has committed $120,000 of capital for the project. The University of Minnesota will be bringing some capital into the project. We're seeking other private grant sources to help fund the build-out. It will be operated at Rice. Rice will provide in-kind services. We'll provide the heat and the lights and the maintenance and the housekeeping at our expense. The university will provide the students, and we think it could be an excellent partnership and a model that could be replicated in other parts of greater Minnesota. So I will turn this over to Dean Lloyd.
Good morning, Chairman and committee members. I'm Patrick Lloyd, Dean of the University of Minnesota School of Dentistry. We are the only dental school in the state. We train approximately 85% of the dentists in the state of Minnesota, about 60% of the dental hygienists. And I'm pleased to be here this morning to present to you this program and project. I first want to thank you, though, for your support last year in moving the cap from our public aid program patients. It's been a huge benefit to our students' program. It's allowed us to demonstrate that everyone deserves the highest quality of care. I also want to thank you for your support in the Dental Innovations Project, which is very responsible for assisting us in this endeavor. This is truly one of those special opportunities to partner with the community, a little distance from the city, to partner with the Area Health Education Center, to partner with organized dentistry and corporate supporters. I've just been here a year and a half. I came from the University of Iowa, and I'm so pleased to be able to see these kind of networks develop almost spontaneously, where people step up to the plate and contribute in ways that only others maybe dreamed about. We intend to send five dental students per month there. They'll spend an entire month there, and four dental hygiene students to learn and appreciate the values and the cultures of rural Minnesota. We know that if you came from a small community, you're more likely to go back there. We know that you can increase that rate of return substantially if during your training you spend some time to fully appreciate those communities. Our goal is to make sure that people have a broader access to career options, to ensure that those that are having difficulty accessing care, especially some very unique minority populations that reside in the greater Wilmer area. Part and parcel of this project is to allow our students to really encourage them to participate in career development for people living in those communities. So our students, dentists and dental hygiene students, will be lecturing and speaking in grade schools, grammar schools, and high schools to encourage people to consider career options in hygiene, dentistry, laboratory technology, dental assisting, so that they too might come back after the training. We're working very hard at the School of Dentistry to provide opportunities for our graduates to consider practicing in areas outside the Twin Cities to better distribute our person power. We graduate 96 dentists per year and about 25 dental hygiene students. We're working very hard in communities like Hibbing, like Wilmer, and other outreach areas to make sure that we get graduates to go where we need them most. And I'm pleased to be here this morning to demonstrate our support both academically, intellectually, and manpower-wise to make this a reality for the state and benefit people not only in the rural areas of Wilmer, but throughout the community. I'd be happy to answer any questions you have about particulars.
I'm tempted to apply a really high-tech engineering evaluation to your presentation.
Really cool.
It really is. Just a couple of practical questions, because I've been involved in Rochester in similar ventures. It's one thing to get a facility. It's another thing to staff it and be able to continue to keep it operational dollars. Just a kind of a quick view, because we do have another one yet, but how do you deal with that side of it? How do you find the people to staff it, and how do you support the dollars you need to continue to operate?
We have been working with the local dental community to build support for this, and they do support it, and we've identified a number of individuals who would have some interest, if not being the full-time faculty member to supervise the students, at least volunteering their time to help out. And so there's been a great deal of interest generated locally, and so we are confident that we can attract the personnel to operate the program. We're identifying other funding sources to provide some ongoing funding, private sources of funds from the dental community and elsewhere, to help keep this program going well into the future.
You know, I would advise you to try anyway, looking at critical access, because it might help attract some dentists. And you mentioned hygienists, but you also have dentists that you would expect to help staff this as well?
Yes, there would be a full-time faculty dentist that's a faculty member of the University of Minnesota, as well as one employed hygienist and two dental assistants as a staff that would work with the students. We've also had volunteers, as I indicated, from the local dental community who would come in a half a day a week or a month to help out. So we've also worked with the county public health departments, the county family service, and human service agencies, and they have strongly supported the program and are encouraging us to keep moving forward.
Thank you. Reverend Junkie, you're right. This is a lot more fun than those old ones.
Yeah.
Listen, Reverend.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This is for the dean. Did I hear you correctly that you graduate 96 students a year?
Yes.
And that the U of M supplies 5% of the dentists in the state
85.
Of Minnesota? 85. Thank you.
Yes.
That helps a little bit.
I'm sorry, 85%. Just to interject, in addition to having a clinical facility in the hospital, we have a large classroom so that we can electronically pipe out our curriculum to the students that are training in those sites so they can stay in sync with their classmates. In addition, the dentists in the community who volunteered or will participate in the process will be able to attend that coursework, earn CE, and stay as contemporary as possible, and connected with the university some 140 miles away. So it's a novel approach. It's got all the patterns that could be duplicated in other parts of the United States.
Outstanding.
Just to finish up, there's a question. I do want to point out, too, that this does go beyond the 12 counties, like Lori Massa said. Mary Ellen's county is only 45 minutes away. Finstead's not far away. I mean, literally, we all get those calls. And we need a place where we can send these folks, and that part of it, I think, is critical, too, to a broader area.
We do have one more today, so we have a couple more members for questions, and I'd ask to be brief if we can, so we do have time for Representative Rukavina as well. Representative Dean.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just had a quick question for the dean. Is there a student loan repayment program for underserved areas in greater Minnesota similar to what we have for physicians in greater outstate Minnesota?
You know?
There is, yes. There's a small program available. Our students are leaving with an average debt of $137,000 per year. And the loan repayment program that's in place at the moment isn't as inviting as we really need it to be. And so it isn't taking advantage of as fully as one might expect.
Thank you.
Representative Ochamba.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. My question was, because both of my counties border on the 12 counties and how that would work, and are the dentists willing to take people from outside of the area because we have the same problems?
Our plan is to take all patients who come to the clinic. And that's been the model. By the way, there is a model that we're following in Hibbing, Minnesota, that operates like this. It's a university program. But we would take all patients, and that's the advantage of having the students involved in the program.
And Mr. Chair and Representative Tremba, it's not just low-income people, although most of us have insurance, most of us have a dentist, but literally anyone could call and make an appointment and go there.
Right. Thank you. I hope, however, I mean, I'd say your target audience is the underserved, and I hope we wouldn't crowd out that.
Absolutely.
I mean, that would be very important. Well, thank you very much for your testimony.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chair.
And we'll hold over House File 2733 for consideration in our committee prioritization. Representative Rukavina. Rukavina, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. It's a pleasure to be here. I haven't been here for a while.
Well, we're ready for you, man.
Yeah, good at that. And Mr. Chair, members, thank you very much for giving me the opportunity to present this today. This project, and I believe you all have these handouts in your packet, is a request for $750,000 from the state for a helipad for the Virginia Regional Medical Center. I have with me today Mr. Keith Harvey, who is the administrator of that facility. I went to school with his brother Ralph, graduated with his brother Ralph. My brother graduated with his brother Scott. His older brother George is on the Rural Electric up there. So, and Mr. Chair, you would be happy to know that his father, Ralph Sr., was a Republican judge in the Iron Range. I'm hoping that Keith votes for me. I don't know if he does or not. But anyway...
I thought you were going to lead up to a story about a dog here someplace.
I've got a little, actually a good story about this, but I do have to say, this hospital is very important to the entire Iron Range area and serves all the way up to the Maundy Waters and Voyages National Park. My mother is on the third floor of this regional medical center in the nursing home. My Auntie Kay is on the fourth floor. I'm her caretaker also, so I spend a lot of time at the facility, and Mr. Harvey does an excellent job, and he's going to tell you today about the necessity for this. So thank you, Mr. Chair, members.
Welcome, committee. Please introduce yourself as we begin.
Mr. Chair, representatives, my name is Keith Harvey. Thank you for giving me the opportunity to present this proposal to you. In your packet, I'm not going to spend a lot of time going through the packet. What I'd like to do is, I don't have a high-tech presentation, but I do have some poster board that I'd like to show you to kind of walk through what we're looking at doing, and just give you kind of the highlights of the proposal and talk about some of my vision and where I think this can go for northeastern Minnesota. So if it's okay, I'm just going to stand up and bring these up.
May need to, just so that the microphones pick it up, move it towards you, and we'll see how that does. But we'll make sure we get it up for the record.
Is that good enough? Can you hear me?
I think we'll be all right.
Will that work?
I think so. Yeah, go ahead.
Okay. I'll try to speak loud so that you can hear. This board here just kind of gives a picture of the hospital and where we're looking at putting this helipad. It's going to be located on the top of the hospital right above our emergency room. It's just a kind of gives you a picture of where we're locating it. Because currently, we have some difficulty with where we land, and that's going to bring up the other poster. We've had trouble for many years with a helipad landing area. What this picture shows is our whole campus. And about 10 years ago, we used to be able to land our helicopter in our parking lot. And then we could take the patients out of our emergency room down to the parking lot. We subsequently built the medical office building out onto that parking lot, which prohibited us from using that parking lot for a helicopter landing pad. During that time, we ended up moving it to a beach next to a lake in Virginia, just because it was the only open area where we could get a helicopter to land. That was not working because it was kicking up sand and creating a mess when they landed. Then they subsequently moved it from that beach to the local cemetery, and scared the hell out of the pigs.
Especially these seniors.
I have cartoon bubbles that I don't want to talk about.
Needless to say, that's a very inappropriate place to do it, and the people didn't like it. Currently,
only in Tom Rukavina's area.
Mr. Chair, the cemetery happened to be across from the hospital.
Yeah, it was very close to the hospital. Actually, it's closer than where we currently land. We currently land, if you look at this picture, this would be the golf course up here. We're currently landing about a mile or so away from the hospital and hauling our patients from the emergency room into an ambulance and to the site to load them up on the helicopter, creating a whole lot of challenges for us. Two of the main concerns that I have as the administrator of the hospital is timing and stability. Timing being how long it takes for us to get a patient who's in a stable condition to a helicopter. And the other one is stability. That is making sure that the patient is stable when we get them to the helicopter. What we're having now is we're getting patients brought to our ER in an unstable condition, stabilizing them in the ER. That takes time enough as it is, but now we have to take them off a table, or take them off a bed, put them in a gurney, load them up into an ambulance, drive them to the site, take them off a gurney, load them onto another gurney, and then load them onto a helicopter and fly them out. That is two things. It's not conducive to stabilizing the patient, and it's also not conducive to timing. It takes a lot of time to do that. And when you're talking about a lot of cardiology situations where we're trying to get patients who are having a heart attack down to a tertiary center where they can get taken care of, that timing is critical. 90 minutes is kind of the golden rule of getting from a time of an onset of a heart attack to the patient getting taken care of. And by having to go through this process, that's creating a lot of delays and problems with that. If you think of where Virginia is located, we are in kind of the northeastern corner north of Duluth, and we service a population of about 90,000 people, and we cover that whole northeastern Arrowhead region. including the Boundary Waters Canoe Area, the Voyageurs National Park. We get a great deal of trauma through those areas, whether people are out fishing, hunting, camping, whatever, that come through our facility. And what we're trying to do is develop a system where we can actually get these people to a tertiary center, an appropriate center, in a much quicker manner. When they have to come into our facility and be stabilized in our ER, then loaded back into an ambulance and brought out to another area to be flown out, it's creating a whole lot of problems, and it's really an unacceptable situation. If you look at the paperwork, it talks about the what the project actually is. It's about $1.5 million project for us to get this helipad on top of our building. A big chunk of that cost is the actual helipad itself, which is about $400,000. We also have to upgrade our elevator system so that we can get the patients from our emergency room up to the roof of the building. It's going to require putting an elevator up above the current structure, and that's where another $300,000 to $400,000 comes in. Then, along with all the other costs, it adds up to about $1.5 million. We have about $150,000 in our current budget for this project. We've been assured by the Iron Range Resources that we'll get $250,000 to supplement that, but that's not getting us anywhere where we need to be. And it's unfortunately, we don't take care of the patients that are here. These patients come into our ER, then they're shipped out to another facility. We have limited resources, and we just don't have the ability to commit to putting something like this on our roof right now. Now, my vision in the future, as it says in those sheets, we are working with St. Mary's Duluth Clinic and their regional heart center to expand their heart center and partner with them to put some of that heart center in the Virginia Regional Medical Center. And I envision at some point in time, as technology upgrades happen and we are able to do a partner with SMDC, that we'll be able to take care of some of these patients right in our facility. So, for instance, if someone's having a heart attack in Ely and we can get a helicopter up to them in Ely, we can maybe bring them to VRMC, Virginia Regional Medical Center, and take care of them in our facility and save that extra half hour, 45 minutes of flying down to Duluth and going through that system. So this has a whole lot of futuristic options for us as we go forward. And it really, I think, is going to provide great service to the people of northeastern Minnesota. We're also working with the Ely Hospital, the Cook Hospital, the Hospital in International Falls, and the Hospital in Aurora to develop a stronger regional advanced life support system. One of the challenges that those facilities have, because they are on the outskirts, is when they have trauma, to get those trauma patients to the appropriate facility in a timely manner. And what we're working with St. Mary's Duluth Clinic and St. Luke's is to develop a sort of an enhanced advanced life support system out of Virginia so that our nurses, our critical care trained nurses, can get on an ambulance and go up to Ely and treat those patients, bring them back to Virginia, and then we can use this air ambulance to get them out. So we're really trying to enhance the whole trauma system in northeastern Minnesota so we can do a better job, and that's the purpose of this project. So, any questions?
Mr. Hardy, who owns the hospital?
The city of Virginia, Mr.
Chairman. Okay. Thank you. President Paul.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For those of you that, well, I've done quite a bit of transferring from ERs to helipads, and I've done it in a lot of different ways, and I can tell you that it takes a lot of time. Even this would take, even if this was operation, it would take more time than one would think. Going out to a golf course a mile away, now, how much time are we talking about? I wouldn't be surprised if you told me 20 minutes to a half an hour.
I would say at least 20 minutes.
Yeah.
Yeah, because you're talking getting the ambulance, getting the individual out of the emergency room, off into the ambulance, off the gurney of the ambulance, into a gurney of the helicopter, and then into the helicopter and up in the air. Personally, it's unacceptable.
Mr. Chairman, it would seem to me that if you cut that down significantly, as it sits right now, it may not even be worth sitting or landing at your facility now when the next hospital was at St. Mary's was only a half an hour away.
Mm-hmm. Flight.
Okay, live.
Mr. Honorable, that was a quick answer.
John Bradley, it was half an hour by flight. It's about an hour and 15 minutes by road.
Right. So I think the point here, Mr. Chairman, is that we could save probably a half hour for these folks, getting them to definitive treatment. if they weren't landing on the golf course. And I just think that point's pretty obvious to me, and I think Mr. Harvey understands that as well.
Mr. Chairman, if I could just confirm that, as I mentioned earlier, cardiovascular disease is the number one disease in northeastern Minnesota. And when an individual has a heart attack, the first 90 minutes are critical. And if we can cut out 20 minutes of time, the opportunity to save lives, also save people from serious cardiovascular problems, is, I think, tremendous.
I'm sorry, listen to Paul.
One more. The trip from the helipad to the ER by ambulance, what is that, your ambulance service? Is that you guys do that, or is there a...
That's our ambulance service.
Okay, so there's no bill generated there?
Mr. Harvey?
Yes, there would be a bill generated for that.
Okay, thank you.
That creates a problem also, because you get multiple bills. We can eliminate that ambulance bill and save that cost right there.
Right. Thank you. What's the assignment?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just have a quick comment. I really like this proposal, and the reason I like it is because you're mixing local and city funds for half of the project and then only coming to the state for half of it. And I think that's very commendable.
Careful, we'll go to Tom's head here to see these things.
Mr. Chair,
Representative Lupina.
I knew I'd be forced to match the dollar for dollar.
Seeing no further questions, thank you very much for your testimony.
Thank you, members.
We will hold over House File 2630 for consideration in our prioritization. Chair will refer House Files 2831 and House File 2832, Representative Abel Bills, to the Healthcare Cost Containment Division. Our Friday meeting, and it's on the bottom of your agenda, just to note for you, will be at the same time, and we were there, but we will be in the basement hearing room, and we will be hearing recommendations that are connected sort of to the veterans' home and the veterans' responsibilities. Any questions from members? And then with that, we're adjourned.